Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this late March afternoon with some sun. Oh my God, these clouds are missing, though planes are leaving trails in the sky, miraculously. So I was thinking about what to cover today. You know, for me, the more obscure the subject matter is, the more appealing it is to me. What I'm going to do today is create a single episode about all of my theories regarding reincarnation. Because you'll hear me mention it a lot, and the way that you would get the complete story is to watch 190 plus videos from this point. And so I'm going to put it all into one canister, and then hopefully we'll elaborate on it enough that you can understand my position. Reincarnation is interesting because it's usually something that is believed due to insecurities about death, about dying. And I can't quite understand that. They say when you get older, you start to really want to live and you really fear death. And I can't say I've been there at all. You know, I've been on the edge of death's door with some poisoning, some food poisoning from a restaurant called The Counter. But, I was trying to live because I've got responsibilities and all that kind of stuff. But, hey, let's say I make it to 80 years old. What kind of responsibilities do I have at that point besides living for my partner, perhaps? Living to guide my children, perhaps, right? But I personally have no knowledge of this huge fear of death that I've talked about in various episodes. I was actually going to grab the book in my house that a buddy gave me that is all about the fear of death and how that if you don't have a fear of death, you're an immature child, you're not connected with your true self because everybody has it. I mean, these generalizations that came out of Freud were extremely damaging to society because people walked in the room without problems and then psychiatrists tell them or have told them, no, you've got all these problems. Oh, I do? Yes, you do. Oh my gosh, you know. The big trend in the late 80s, early 90s was convincing, psychiatrists were convincing children that they were molested by their fathers typically because they had a bunch of buddies who were attorneys that would then take on the case and drag a bunch of money out of the state. It had nothing to do with the actual history of these kids, right? It's a profit deal. So I want to preface this episode that I'm not coming at reincarnation as a teddy bear, as a pacifier towards this inner terror that I have that I need to be reincarnated. It takes a little while in your life to figure out that if you're really dead and you don't exist anymore, like some of my atheist friends believe, you won't be around to miss it. You're just gone. So, whatever, c'est la vie. It's the way the world would work in that particular instance, and you wouldn't miss anything, right? I'm also not coming at reincarnation because I want to see my grandma again, or I want to meet Elvis. There's none of that. I'm also not going to come from a standpoint that I exactly know what's going to happen on the other side, because that's another annoying tact and angle at reincarnation that can be very frustrating. At 23 years old, I had a silly attempt to commit suicide, which is in the suicide episode way back in season one. And when I did so, there was an amazing experience when I started to kind of drift away. So I'll share that. I do believe that some form of apparition, being Walt Disney, walked up to me at the park and showed me where Bob Kerr was, as I just mentioned in an episode recently. That for me, put this way. If you're an atheist, listen up. That experience for me was conclusive proof, because I know I'm not someone who's, trying to create ghost stories. I know I don't need attention from fucking anybody, right? And so I'm telling you that that event totally and completely occurred, and I cannot, for the life of me, explain that one away, because just simply sensing Bob in the park wasn't his GPS, when I was told that he was there, he wasn't there. When, according to him, he was on, I said Matador, I meant to say Matterhorn. Had a couple big flubs last episodes. He was on the Matterhorn. So his GPS was in a different location than the one I was told to go to actually meet him where he was going to be standing about 5 minutes later. But that for me is conclusive proof that not only is there an afterlife of some sort, but you have an intelligent connection with the afterlife, or that you can mold your afterlife, in that Walt Disney, the gentleman that only ever saw Disneyland, right? He never saw any of his other parks. They didn't exist before he died. That's his baby. Disneyland is his baby, and he is there, in my opinion, to watch it. It's a beautiful, fun place. You know, there's all these people that try to criticize it, but, you know, whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of corporate sponsorship and stuff, but, you know, you're talking about these rides costing hundreds of millions of dollars and taking, you know, up to 15 years to create. So you finance it and tell me how easy it is. You'll say, oh, yeah, that Energizer logo on the front looks great, guys. So I will tell you, as a scientist, as an absolute non-spiritual person, the side of me that is like that, this just opened the box up. I know you feel me. Okay. Reincarnation was actually something for probably the majority of my life. I'd say, probably about 4/5 of my life, I did not believe, and I thought it was a weakness, a theory of weakness. Meaning, you know, people just need that. And so whatever, tell yourself whatever you believe. And it was through later thought processes, probably in my mid-30s up, and it's not because I, you know, approach my mortality, and my mortality's got me freaked out about death, so yes, I then adapt, you know, some pacification. You have to understand, people, it's like, it's nothing like that whatsoever. I don't wake up insecure about, you know, dying or what's after. I've lived four times the amount of life than I ever thought I would ever live. I had pretty good expectations, and I still blew them away. So, you know, through chance and opportunity and working hard and all that stuff. So I'm good, man. I'm good. But when I started to study, or cross-correlate, I should say, you know, the basic theories about energy of the universe, and you start to understand that no matter how much physics and physicists have lied to us to try and cover up a lot of things that, you know, Faraday to Tesla figured out, they did uncover one beautiful thing, even though these different classification mechanisms that I think of right now, but energy is forever, and energy cannot be destroyed. And it really comes down to the most basic principles of, where would it hide? Where would it go to? How do you take a packet of energy, a quantum packet of energy in the universe, and make it hide somewhere? You can't. Ever squeeze something in your hands and then it's real slippery and it just moves between your fingers and there's nothing you can do to get rid of it because you're not a goddamn magician, right? Where would it go? Absorb into your skin? Fly so far across the room you can't see it, and therefore out of sight, out of mind, it's destroyed. So here's the basic science for those of you who are atheists, okay, that I think you can get behind. Energy can do nothing more than transform. I think if you're willing to just be humble for a second and engage in a little bit of humiliation, take down the meter on your hubris for one fleeting moment of your life, you have to acknowledge that we don't know anything about the brain, really. The most that we know is that there are regions of the brain that act as conduits to something else, and therefore there's your hand, you know, your left hand, right hand, the big chunks of your brain that control that. You know, we know what frontal lobes do. You know, we know that essentially some of the basic parts, and if we hurt the brain, you're going to lose this functionality. But we don't know how the tubes and how the neurons inside your brain store memory. We think we know the general, liaison proximity of the part of the brain that talks to whatever is actually storing the information, but we don't understand. we might be able to put a device on the back of the visual cortex and map it like a video card onto a television screen, or some people think that they've already got that. That's still a functional invention. That is not truly understanding where our consciousness comes from and where our memories go, and why, as I will get into, we see individuals with old souls. So I'm going to suggest to you that there's probably an ethereal particle that creates the entire universe. And the only thing that you have done is listen to physicists that use essentially, you know, computerized sigma 6 algorithms and human sigma 6 algorithms to figure out and classify the velocity of ether, and you call them electrons, neutrons, protons, etc. That's all you've done. It is still a fundamental particle. But that's what creates this physical matter realm that we are in. And because we tend to be very myopic and closed-minded, or very limited in our thinking process, we say that's it. That's it, man. That's what we're made out of. It's all we can find. And I know that I'm human, and that means perfect, and that means I found everything. Or there's been a lot of other smart people before me, and they found everything. And I mean fucking everything in the universe. There couldn't be another thing that exists. But well, what are you doing now? And you're like, oh, well, I'm at the Hadron Collider. I'm at the Stanford Collider. And we're finding new subatomic matter in the universe. Oh, so you're able to find new stuff, but no one else was in the past, right? Just bizarre how the ego, the fragile ego of a nerd, starts creating bizarre paradigms of complete closed-mindedness. And yet you could take a scientist that goes to bed with one of the most closed fucking minds on planet Earth, and if you crawl into their id, they're literally whispering to themselves, you have such an open mind. I can't even believe how existential you are as a scientist. And wow, you know, without you, the whole universe is going to explode. I'm going to tell you right now that whatever makes up our consciousness, our true consciousness, is something else. It's a different particle. It's a different type of energy. It may not be a particle. Who the fuck knows? It doesn't really matter. You're conscious and you can hear me, and I'm conscious and I can hear myself. Right? Somehow there was a conduit between these vessels that we have. And it may be every single thing in the universe. It might be that the coffee table I have out here is alive, but it's just taking on a much different life cycle. You know, oh, poor coffee table. That fucking thing will probably live longer than me, you know. This bush in front of me is probably going to live forever. Because unless someone chops every single part of it down and burns it, it's going to sit there living for 100 years. If one little leaf, one little part of its stem survives, then the whole thing survived. It's interesting, right? We are taught in the scientific community to engage in a bizarre level of humiliation with who we are as beings, right? What I mean by that is that you are to, you get into this sort of, you know, I hate to use, it's like doublespeak, it's like, it's a bit of a cognitive dissonance a little bit, which is that you can feel how massive you are, you can feel how amazing your consciousness is. But then you are to automatically crawl into this Kurzweil model that your brain mysteriously is all of that. For those of you who've seen a brain, whether you've seen it in a scientific sense or if you've seen it due to an accident, it lacks the glory of who we are. It lacks the physical design of who we are. It's the same shit. Wound all up inside your skull with a couple other glands in there, right? Your pineal gland, pituitary gland off to the side. Obviously, got some eyeballs, the visual cortex reporting in, the hammers from your ears. So, it's some amazing outer peripheral devices, literally talking to your computer. So, you know, you got your mouse over here, and your laser printer over here, and your Wacom pad. They're really the receptors that take in all the electricity and modulate it into your brain, and then your brain's making this world out of it. So you'll notice that my approach is to come at it very scientifically and not through some spiritual fear. I'm not the guy walking into the church with shaky hands, Because last night I realized I'm going to die at some point. And I need someone to tell me some arbitrary story about never dying. But let's define reincarnation versus the other story, because if you were to walk into a spiritual institution, you would normally get, depending on if you're walking to a Christian one versus the Hindu one, you're going to walk in the door and have someone say, well, you die and then you get resurrected by Christ on the judgment day, and then if you've been a good boy and girl, you go to heaven, right? If you're a Mormon, you believe there's three celestial realms. One where you're naughty and you don't see Jesus or God. The second one, you see Jesus. And the third one, you see Jesus and God. But that one, you know, you maintain your identity as literally your human given name here on earth. And you take that with you. If you're Mormon, you believe you keep your physical body exactly the way it is. And you look in the mirror up there and it's exactly who you were. And I don't know if you get to adjust your age. You know, it kind of suck if some hot chick died at 28 and then some other, her best friend lived to be 101, and they try to hang out up there at the beach, you know, and it's, you know, one gets all the fellas. So I'm assuming they believe that you can selectively cut through the index or select through the index of your age bracket and pick the best one you've got, right? But reincarnation is distinctively something different. And it is that your human identity reincarnates, that you get a new vessel. You get new parents. Perhaps you get new siblings, but you definitely get new relatives and a whole new family line. And you probably get to live in a different place on at least planet Earth, if this is the only place in the universe where this is occurring. Or you get to live somewhere else in the universe. Perhaps you graduate through all the life forces in, you know, Earth, and you move on to something more complex. Who knows? But true reincarnation is that you lose identity with your social security number given to you by wherever you live. And again, your vessel is something of the past. Now, we care about our vessels today because we're in them. You ever look at your name written on a piece of paper and you think to yourself, that is the collection of symbols in the universe that is your identity right now. And it's been that identity since you were born into this vessel. Think about how many times your name's been written down all over paperwork and the government. It's in digital bits and some hard drive somewhere in the cloud. There's a lot of work that goes into becoming who you are as a person. And so some folks find it appalling, the idea of losing that identity. It is my opinion that once you pass on, once you cross over and transcend out of the human body, that a lot of the things that you care about in this universe simply vanish instantaneously. It's as if you've been hanging on to the cookie in the cookie jar your whole life. And the second you pass away, the cookie goes away, the jar goes away. And the entire desire and matrix in your mind that is making you want that thing becomes obsolete, becomes childish, and you release and you join the universe. Now, I think one of the things that we don't like to think about is we've worked really, really hard to become, say, intelligent in our vessel, to become deep. And there's this notion that perhaps you could be reincarnated as, you know, an insect. You could have achieved a higher class structure in the world, and then you're born into the, you know, the India slums. It poses a question, you know, is there a level of difficulty that we are intentionally put in, and do we increase over time or do we decrease over time? Are we put in a really hard level and then we earn the easier levels? Is Steven Spielberg on level 10? For difficulty, or is he in level 1? He seemed to be in the right place at the right time his whole life. Obviously, he's an extremely talented human being. But is his access to the answers of the universe easier because he's on a lower level? Does he look inside of his brain for a solution to something and find that solution easier because he is at a lower level of difficulty? Or did he earn the machine in his brain, in his soul, perhaps, that allows him to gain more information than he did in previous iterations. Starting off as a single cell creature, and then he becomes Steven Spielberg eventually. These are questions I ask, right? Do we graduate out of this once we get, you know, intelligent to a certain point? Do we graduate up to other forms of life? Do we become the UFOs, the aliens that observe? Is that the afterlife? What I think is very interesting about death, before we really continue parsing into this thing, is that we believe that death exists simply because the mortal coil ceases to function, and our eyes are incapable of seeing what potentially happens to us after this life. You know, what if people step out of their bodies and just float around the universe? They float up to some beautiful consciousness in the universe. The universe becomes almost a baby pool, not an Olympic pool, but a baby pool. And all the other life forms who are in that stage are up there swimming around saying, "Hey, what's up? Hey, not much, man. Cool. Nice to meet you." But we're sure it's the end because we can't perceive anything else. And we think that, you know, conception within a woman's womb, we think it's miraculous. We think it's a phenomenon. Religious people think it's due to God. Scientific people, well, they don't really have an explanation why the little tiny piece of cellular tissue, when the sperm and the egg get together, all of a sudden form an electrical pattern known as a heartbeat that turns into a living creature. Because remember, it's not just humans that are doing this. Everything on this planet does it. You know, plants don't have technically heartbeats, but they live. Phenomenal, right? But little single cell, you know, amoebas, they have little cycles inside them that look like little heartbeats, right? So what would be the big phenomenon? That the orbital patterns of ethereal energy that turns into the atomic mass that we believe to be life is led by a template that simply exists in a different realm that we can't see. It's really not a different realm. It's this realm, right? There are no real dimensions. It's dimensions are a matter of classifying energy such that we have the stuff that is seen with particular optics or particular eyes or particular mathematics in one category. There are no dimensions that are away from here. There are simply dimensions that we can't see while we're here in this dimension with these eyes, with this mechanism to interpret the data. We see the Fibonacci pattern in all life. That's the golden rule, the golden mean, right? A diminishing orbit. The spiral pattern of thorns on a rose bush. The actual petals that come out of a rose itself. All the cactus in the universe. I mean, all this stuff. It's amazing. You can see it all the time. Well, something is guiding that energy in that particular pattern. It would seem that rotation is a very big part of the design of the universe. Huge part. So don't be so sure that death exists. You know, I've thought about doing a whole episode on death. It's really funny that before I recorded the first official Deep Thoughts, which was unmiked and was really kind of goofy, I did a color video with this camera. It was called Life and Death. And it was because my buddy gave me that book on death, and I just got so fed up with its entire theory after reading it that I had to do a video. But again, if you can just do a little bit of math and realize that perhaps death doesn't exist, maybe you can chill out. So let's get into reincarnation. I've said I believe reincarnation exists because I believe that sitting in heaven as a single entity, perhaps gaining all knowledge instantaneously upon death, leaving your coil, having been a good boy and girl, and you sit up there in this elite bullshit inside this fucking caged, you know, place. Heaven's got wall around it. Isn't that funny? Take any religious person and say, well, heaven has gates. So why not make a gate and a border around whatever country you live in? Isn't that funny? But I believe that that's utter stagnation and would be without something very special about its existence. And perhaps I think you have to absolutely limit what you would experience in heaven, otherwise you'd hate it. It would be hell Reincarnation is a way to not go crazy, to reset yourself, as you guys know I've said several times. I'll try not to belabor points that I've made a million times. From time to time, about every 2 years, I let the Mormons come and talk to me for about 6 months or so. They typically peel off and just cease showing up, which is kind of funny. But I told them once, probably last couple sessions, I said, you know, do you believe in reincarnation? And they, oh, no, no. What do you believe? We take our bodies and we go to the other side. And then you can, you know, there's this weird mezzanine holding area where you can pray for everyone that didn't get the story of Christ and giving everyone an equal chance to join the celestial realms. But, you know, if you get to that celestial realm or that kind of Ellis Island in the Mormon religion and you haven't accepted Christ, you'll never get to the highest realm with God. You're kind of subjugated and limited to the middle realm, which is you're only going to see Christ and all your relatives. And so I said, you know, what would be the sin? Take everything you know about God and what you believe you know about God. And I said, what would be the sin of coming down and living another life? What's the sin there? What's the big fucking problem? God, if he exists, worked really hard to write this software. Really hard. Like I keep stressing with you guys, I want you to think about this because I think it will profoundly impact the way you view the universe. This code is bug free. I haven't been able to find a bug. Maybe there's a bunch of bugs once you die or whatever, once your mortal coil passes away, right? But if I run the program twice, I'm a dick. What sense does that make? And why work so hard to build this universe? Because I don't give a shit if you're an atheist or the biggest fucking Bible thumper in planet Earth. There's a tremendous amount of work holding this universe together. And it doesn't matter if you think it's flat with the firmament dome, we think it's heliocentric and infinite. There's a tremendous amount of work here. If you're religious, you're the most anti-reincarnation group of people on planet Earth, and then you think that this giant infinite program was written for a tiny fungus that lives on either a flat disk or a heliocentric ball. Now, the Mormons actually endorse alien life, which is kind of cool, but still, no matter how you slice it, there's basically an infinite universe with an infinitely small amount of living creatures in it, no matter how vast it is. So what would be the point in building this, right? It would be, if for those of you who play video games, be like creating World of Warcraft, and you've got the Alliance, you've got the Horde, you've got, I don't know how many they have now, nine races you can play, and then you have all these classes you can play within those races. You have, I don't know, God, you know, 20,000 quests you can do or whatever. But you only play the game one time. You're one class, one race, you do generally all the quests you can do in that, you know, in that class, that race, and that alliance, or that orientation, right? And then you stop playing. And you go, well, there's no one else that can play the game. Well, what's the sin in going back in and playing the other side? Playing the same race, but a different sex. Who knows? What's the big violation? Where does God get angry? That fundamental argument for me makes absolutely no goddamn sense on planet Earth. And I think we should all kind of pull back a little bit, get out of, you know, man-made religions, pull out of the closed-mindedness of science, and just think about it for a second. This isn't an argument of what you need as a human being, right? It's not, I need to reincarnate because I got so much more to give the universe, or, you know, whatever. You think you have something else to contribute, but you're not even quite sure what it is. You didn't get to do everything, so you want to do it over again. It has nothing to do with those desires, whether or not you have them or not. It's just that we have been taught a bunch of closed-minded algorithms about how the universe works. And I think it's time that we, before we really get into the theory of this, we divorce ourselves from those things. We pull out of it. Because if you were a supreme life force watching humanity at this point, and you were to subscribe to either the atheist, you know, death really exists and that's the end of it, but I'm such a scientist, I study energy patterns, but I can't seem to fucking figure out the energy can't hide in the universe, but I think that my energy dissolves somehow, diffuses into the universe, which we'll get into. Or I'm a Bible thumper and I think that, you know, I hang on to my mortal coil in the next universe. I don't know about you, but I would laugh my ass off if I was a gray alien paying attention to these folks. Let's go at the dilution theory of death, of transformation, let's just say. So scientists might say, yeah, you know, you can't hide energy in the universe, touche. However, the organizational patterns that hold mass together, obviously, your body dies, regardless if you're if you have an extra piece of soul or whatever that moves on in spirit. We know that we bury the body in a coffin and it starts to deteriorate. If we don't embalm it and take out organs and fill you up with fluid, it really deteriorates. Bugs will form and eat you. So we know that that happens.
All right.
But let's slow down time for 1 second. Let's slow down the scientific theories that you believe to get to that point of the theory. As long as my heart is pumping and I keep nourishment in my body and I keep out toxins, right? My body continues to work and hold together for the most part. I get to maintain consciousness if I don't go insane by taking too many flu shots or sucking down the tailpipe of a plane that makes clouds all of a sudden. I get to be me until the day I die. Now, if your spirit, literally the schematic pattern, the celestial protein pattern or protein patterns that create your body, the Fibonacci pattern that seems to arrive in all life. Humans have it too, right? The shape of the way the skull spirals into existence. It's our skull is very similar to a seashell. Whereas in the center of your nasal canal is the most compact part of the fractal pattern, and as it unwinds, you start to gain cavity down to your cerebellum. The assumption, which I think is incorrect and very presumptuous, is that your spirit energy somehow loses cohesion. That the mere disconnection between the body and the spirit, all of a sudden, the body ceases to have the directional patterns, the schematics anymore to hold together. You know, it's like I always talk about the bookshelf idea when you talk about protein patterns telling DNA what to do. If you took a human body and you shut down all protein pattern production and procreation, the body will just turn into a pile of goo. It just would. All the cells that are alive would finish their cycle and die. Well, let's expand the metaphor up. We're not sure where the spirit connects with the body, but it would seem that the glandular structures down the center of your body inside, from the center of your skull to the base of your tailbone, that is where your body gets all of its schematic injection. Quite frankly, on a technical level, it would be that your spirit would infiltrate the electrical patterns of your body, and they will have, since the very first conceptual moment of the sperm and the egg, they will have been talking to these phenomenal things called protein patterns. They fold faster than the speed of light, all right? So the mortal coil has an injury. The mortal coil has been designed to live a certain amount of time and then expire. It just is. Because we don't want to be the same thing forever. And then your spirit pulls away. You're dead. Technically, as mankind believes it, your body has ceased to function properly. It's had a terminal illness, whether it be just old age or whatever. But in that model, your body has to have an injection of schematics of consciousness before it actually is anything, really, besides a lump of energy. Your spirit pulls out of your body, and then what is acting on your spirit energy? What would be acting on it in such a way that it gets diffused into the universe? Honestly, nothing. Nothing would be acting on your spirit. It would continue going indefinitely. But your spirit has a talent, right? Your spirit is compatible with body energy. Your spirit, who's most likely not made of any ether of any kind, can talk to ether. There's just something about it. And through some divine design, when a conception moment happens, when a sperm and an egg, whether it be an insect or a human being or an alien, converge, there's some orbital pattern of energy, some energy door that perhaps opens up, and that's when you can attach to it and take ownership of it. Now, what's interesting is this. The thing that we wouldn't want to necessarily conceive of is, what if we get a chance to leave our body, but if we happen to walk past a conceptual moment, you're in the red light district in Amsterdam, and a condom bursts, you get sucked right into that woman's womb. You don't have any control. If you're within a certain proximity, you get elected to be the life force that that woman's going to carry. Perhaps it has nothing to do with proximity whatsoever, because in the other realm, there really is no XYZT. You just get, you're at all places at all times. It doesn't even really matter. And so we all sort of are in a, we're in a circus. We're in a carnival. We're at an amusement park. And every one of the rides is a new life. And because you can't leave the grounds of one of these facilities, which would be the infinite universe for us, you get pulled in all kinds of directions. But you don't fear it. You don't fear it because you understand the ecosystem of the whole thing. See you later, as you get pulled away. So for those of you who ask the question, why would reincarnation exist? It's what I've said on many episodes. If I let you stay the person that you are, you keep your social security number, your first, middle, last name, and all your relative chains that make up the tree of life, and you kept it forever, you would go insane like the Q in Star Trek, right? And again, if you need to see a beautiful episode that explains that perfectly, I'm not going to go all the way through it again because I've been through it 3 or 4 times in episodes. Just look for Star Trek Voyager. Look up all the Q episodes. There's an episode where 2 Qs show up. Just look up Q committing suicide. Star Trek Voyager. You'll find the episode. Jump on Netflix and just watch it for me. If you have any problem understanding this, and it'll completely explain why heaven doesn't make any sense and why the Buddhists coined the phrase nirvana as hell. Heaven and hell. What's the sin in believing in Santa Claus again? And I don't necessarily mean Santa Claus specifically, but whatever magic you believed in as a child. As you get older, the burdens increase, right? More responsibilities. You get old. It's hard to work. It's hard to make money like you used to make, but the bills keep going up because that's the way society is. You know, society is designed to fuck older people over. There's no more retirement anymore, right? I mean, it's insane what we've allowed this world to turn into. It's all right. You pop out, you get to restart. Is that horrible? What if you, again, you're 85 years old and you figured a bunch of stuff out? Like, oh my God, if I get a chance to, you know, if I ever had a chance to be young again, I would do all these new things, either to help society, help myself, whatever. Well, just hang in there. You'll get your chance. You may or may not know who you were, but it doesn't matter. So what are some of the indications that reincarnation does happen? Because there are full indicators that reincarnation happens. I think the most evident examples that reincarnation exists, and we just ignore it, which is strange, is that kids are born that remember who they were. And it's interesting because there seems to be, in some cases, a regional proximity to their reincarnation. Meaning they die in Scotland and they're reincarnated in Ireland. You know, they don't move that far on the surface of the planet. And then they're like, hey, I remember being in this family over here and we lived in this seacoast home on the summer and dad was this and mom was this and the neighbors' names were, you know, whatever. And they film this, and they get better and better at filming this. But this was happening when I was a kid. There was a Spanish kid who was born, and he went to another village, and he named everyone in the village. It's bizarre. That, for me, is pretty much conclusive proof. And scientists and skeptics will say, oh, well, it's just a, you know, coink-a-dink that if, you know, a bunch of kids wake up and say this, then someone's going to be right, like the guy who predicts an earthquake every day will eventually be correct. But now let's rewind for 1 second. What conception does a child have of reincarnation to begin with? These kids don't have parents that were indoctrinating them. Were you reincarnated? Do you know the Smiths down the street who live in the red house with their friends called the Barnbys and blah, blah, blah? The parents didn't do that to the children. The children were simply not content with getting up every morning and being who they were. They had this memory of who they were. Now, I do want to throw some bathwater out with some of these things. There are a lot of people out there that need to feel special, and they are attention getters, and they milk the system, and they pollute the data pool for what I'm trying to mention to you by saying that they went and got hypnotized, and they regressed back to previous lives. And the amount of chicks I have personally met, and the few people I've met on this planet, right, who think that they were Nefertiti, who think that they were Cleopatra. You know, they pick these women that they've heard a few romantic stories about, of which history barely has any knowledge of, you know, Nefertiti, for Christ's sake. We have a bust that's supposed to be her. That woman would have, you know, millions of souls with all the women that have tried to gain attention to themselves by saying that that's who they were, right? Consequently, the same goes for the Mayflower. The amount of friends I've said, oh, my relatives came over on the Mayflower. Okay, well, at this point, it's a cruise ship at this point, the amount of people that came over from that thing. And they have no history of their family from the 1500s and up. That's what's funny. Believe me, if you came over on the Mayflower, you got a whole book in your house about every president you're related to, you know, all this other stuff. And they don't remember that a lot of these folks that came over died. They just died because they didn't know how to, you know, adapt to the environment. We also have a very basic thing that happens that I think is very interesting. And I use this on the Mormons all the time, because the problem with the Mormons is that they're 18-year-old kids. They're 18 to 21-year-old children, so they haven't experienced any life. They've been stuck in a quarantine, you know, jar of Mormonism, for good or bad. I mean, that's just what they've done. But usually, someone in their mid-20s and up starts to notice the children have dispositions. They have older souls. They're more calm. They're more relaxed. And I used to think that old souls were merely the byproduct of a family that was older. They're more mature. The child was in a more mature mother. And so the child comes out more mature. Now, there's definitely impact on this, on the character of a human being that is raised in a more mature environment. They simply are more mature in some areas. But I've seen, you know, for the lack of a better designation, a lower IQ person have an extremely high IQ kid. And so there's no correlation with why the child is either an academic genius or an academic genius and a social butterfly. Just seems to be born with street smarts, seems to be born with a way of, you know, solving problems for kids. When you see a young kid at like 13, you know, settle down two kids that are arguing, whether it be female or male, it's amazing how some of them are born diplomats. With no training from their parents at all, they just sense empathetically what's going on so accurately that they're able to say what both parties need to hear to calm them down. There was a little viral video that went around the other day where these two kids were fighting in a street in the ghetto, and another kid walked up, must have been in his mid-20s or whatever, mid to late 20s, and he just started speaking. And he wasn't a big guy. Usually, you know, it's a 6'5" dad can walk up to 2 5'8" kids and calm them down because they feel the presence of a larger character. No, one of these kids was bigger than the guy that walked up. And he just said, you know, he belabored with him for like 10 minutes talking about how, you know, the group of kids around them wanted them to fight. And he goes, why are you doing this? Because they're laughing. It's because they're laughing at you right now that you're fighting. You doing this show for them, they don't give a shit about you. What do you have to gain? What do you have really against each other? Do you even know each other? And he calmed them all the way down. That guy's got an older soul. He does. The most fundamental question, I think, is that whether or not you have a spirit or not. Some outer being that is your true form. And I've talked about on other shows. You've all heard the stories of people that were dead, technically speaking. Their heart stopped pounding. They're either in surgery or they're in some bizarre location. Nikki Six, you know, sticking his arm full of a bunch of heroin. Floating away from his body. People in car accidents. There are some great videos out there about reincarnation. Or sorry, I shouldn't say it, about out-of-body experiences, or sorry, after-death experiences, near-death experiences. And they're being remade by documentary teams that have done beautiful jobs filming these videos and really getting into the character of the individuals. And it would seem somehow they plucked out of society the folks that have claimed such things, and they have very successful careers, and they don't have any need for attention. You don't have these attention whores seeming to milk the episode. I think that's a big deal. So what are some of the social changes that would occur if this sort of belief were to become formalized in universities? You know, I'm just riffing in the backyard based on my life experiences and my research. But what if it was something that everyone started believing in this planet? What would be some of the changes that would occur? Well, there's always a two-column ledger to every single increase in perception, right? Because ignorance is bliss. It really, really is, right? I'm not a big Janine Garofalo fan, but she had one of the best lines I've ever heard in a movie. She said, is being stupid like being high all the time? My favorite lines. Obviously, she probably didn't write it, but it was brilliant. So there can be a lot of bliss attained by never having these thought processes. But if the whole planet believed in reincarnation, I think a couple things would happen. Let's study the columns of pros and cons. Let's go for a pro. Well, now all of a sudden we understand why we are what we are more than ever. Right? For those who say that God can't exist because people die and suffering happens, well, now that peels away a little bit because it's all relative to this particular journey. And who knows whether or not we choose those journeys for ourselves. We want to be on a higher level of difficulty because we're sick and tired of being Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and James Cameron just sailing through life. We want something tough. In fact, we want it to be so tough that we're on level 9 and just getting to 35 years old in this particular level is really hard. Most people in this level say die at 10 years old because they're born into really crazy parts of the universe. And so it's a challenge to get to 30. You're not aware of it when you're alive. But when you die, you're like, when that vessel dies and you pop back out, you're like, ah, oh, geez, man, hey, at least I made it to, you know, 12. You gonna do it again? I sure am. I think I figured it out. I go left instead of right, and I live longer. If we started believing reincarnation, it would disembody and remove the power structure from religion, from man-made religion. All these fucking pedophiles that embed themselves in our houses of worship, they would be destroyed. It would just be overnight. They go empty. We start taxing all the real estate. We start incarcerating all these pedophiles. I don't give a shit if you have a fish hat on your head or not. You're going to jail. And we're going to let a few gangbangers get access to you in prison. So that would clean up the universe quite a bit, wouldn't it? Those who have been extorting power in the name of a creator. I don't know if there's anything more blasphemous in the universe, just on a conceptual level, right? We always talk about do no harm. How could you do any more harm than that? I don't think you can. Now, what's the con? The con is actually kind of scary. If the entire planet of Earth believed in reincarnation, you might get some sociopaths that believe, well, fine. Then what would be the sin of me killing another human being if we get reincarnated? at that point, the theory would have to advance into a social experiment where we would have to also add to the theory, well, this is merely a scientific reality that there is life after this life, that you do perhaps come back into another body and your spirit renews. Okay, your spirit never dies. But what's the game? What's the purpose? What if, are there any constraints? Like, the, you know, the Hindus believe in karma, and karma has a lot of rules to it, right? They have an interesting control mechanism in karma, which is to say, if you, a parent, commit a sin against society, that your children will suffer for 7 generations. And so you screwing with everybody hurts everyone, right? We can't have law of the jungle all of a sudden, can we? We can't have people that believe they can do anything to anyone simply because it all recycles. It is possible that our elders figured this out as well and quashed the notion of reincarnation simply to keep that con from becoming a reality. Because even if we could prove that a child could identify a village clear across the world and name everyone and talk about their life history and the person that died that they became and lament extensively, 100% accurate, it wouldn't give us necessarily the codec of how to live in this world. We would need someone to pretty much go to some sort of authoritative body, more than one person, find out all the rules, come back with those rules, and let us know what's going on. Now, I have talked way, way back in season 1 about the atomistic phase of humanity, which is, I believe that people like Joseph Smith have discovered tribes that still exist on the planet today that still believe this is the case. Although it is interesting how the hive mind of man's current understanding of the universe seems to undo these belief systems. But there supposedly is a time in history when there was no separation between the spiritual realm and this body energy mass realm, and that there was always a communion between the spirits of the past and us today. And that over time, through indoctrination, we lost this connection with the spiritual realm, almost as if we were waking up out of a dream. The amount of rituals in the planet today to the dead is pretty phenomenal still, right? There's still a lot of Japanese homes that have shrines in their homes to the dead. The Egyptians did tons of, you know, food sacrifices. And the Egyptians actually had a very interesting take on it, because they would put out food on plates. And as the food deteriorated and, you know, dried up, their belief system was that the life essence of that food was being consumed by the spirits. And that's why it looked bad the next day or a week later. We all know that the Egyptians believed that you took your body with you and you took your possessions with you to the other side, and whatever the pastimes were of their era, that's what they did. They hunted in the next era. They took their wives with them. They took their children. They took, not necessarily their children, but they took their the servants with them, their animals with them. So everything was slaughtered once someone died. And if you think about it for a split second, it's actually a very interesting checks and balances. If you were the servant of a pharaoh, and the policy was that when the pharaoh died, you died too, what would you do to keep that guy alive? Anything and everything, right? Because his death is your death. And let's say you're 35 years old and you get to serve the pharaoh who's 80. You would do everything in your power to get another 10 years, to get him to 90. But we have pharaohs, you know, skulls that we believe are almost 100 years old. So without healthcare, they lived a perfect life, right? In my opinion, if you make it to 80, you've won. Everything after that's gravy. In closing, what I want to say is this. Why be so sure of things you don't know? Why? Why be so sure about what death is and what's after death? Why? does your ego truly need to tick that one off inside your list of uncertainties? Can you not live with the possibility that you just simply don't know? I think you can. I think you can big time. I want you to also consider for a second, I believe I talked about this in Creating the Universe episode, but it quite possibly might be that we created the universe. We created it the way it is to be sustainable. If life just ended, well, then eventually all life would end. Plant life would end. Insect life would end. Everything would end. That's not sustainable. I think your biggest clue about the life that we live and the reincarnation patterns that we enjoy is right in front of your face, which is that mass and energy, even on ethereal sense, continue reincarnating forever, reforming. We have discovered in this universe that things that resonate at the same patterns tend to attract to each other. You know, there's all these stories about the waste that's in the Pacific Ocean that just keeps getting dumped into the ocean and barges. The waste actually divides up and floats around the ocean, and things of similar designs make reefs together, right? When I was a kid in the 80s, they talked about, and I haven't researched this again as an adult with the internet, but there was this big thing in the news, I think in the late 80s, mid 80s, that there was a huge barge of condoms that someone had discovered in the Pacific Ocean, because whatever, for whatever reason, used up condoms all resonated the same energy, and they have the stickiness to them, and they ended up finding each other in the ocean, and every time a new batch was poured in the ocean, they would float around and find this reef or make a new one. It's bizarre, right? And I will say that was reported in the real, you know, fake news. So if that's fake, blame them. So if your soul has a pattern that resonates to life, whatever that is, wouldn't it make sense that we all kind of naturally attract to each other in the universe? Right? By the way, the planes have now littered our sky a little bit here. Unreal. So I hope you feel me. I'd be really interested in your opinions about what I've said in this specific video. I'm not that interested in people telling me that they've went and regressed and now that, you know, they know that they were Julius Caesar in a previous life. The one I would believe is that you're Joe the Plumber. That's the one I would be most likely to believe, not, you know, some celebrity, because it feeds your ego in this world. I'm sure if reincarnation is real, yeah, some of you, well, one of you was Napoleon. One of you was Lincoln. I totally believe that we would change genders as well. You know, you'd be a guy one time, guy five times, and your girl twice. Who knows? Getting that Egyptian, you know, left brain, right brain capability. There might be left another question, which is to say, are souls created anywhere in the universe, or is there a finite amount of them? Because obviously we've increased the population of beings in this world. We just do. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Is there a God synthesizing together in a little, you know, rector set up there in heaven making new souls? I don't know. There's an infinite number of numbers in the universe. Infinitely big, infinitely small, infinitely positive, infinitely negative, right? So maybe the inconceivable number set is an indicator of how many souls there are in the universe. Infinity is a rough one for the consciousness to conceive, right? Something tells me that after death, a lot of inconceivable things become remotely conceivable, right? I think that's it. Hope that was entertaining. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. That's really all you need to know. It's got YouTube, Facebook, and the RSS feed. Again, we're getting rid of the Facebook page for a locked, closed Facebook group. The quality of the group has already increased the communications tenfold, and I'm still getting fake accounts liking the Facebook page. In fact, I'm probably going to get rid of it before this episode airs because I'm just sick and tired of the fakeness in there. Anyhow, if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next reincarnation. Over now.